talk about our experiences during the earthquake in Haiti. Before we start with that, I'm going to offer a prayer in Creole. Alright. Nous disons merci pour un si bel jour comme aujourd'hui que nous capables de réunir là en un seul corps. Dans le nom, nous disons merci pour tout le monde dans le village là. Aider à jouer une bonne expérience. Dans le temps qui a passé là et faire jouer une joie à travers tout le monde qui est à côté de nous. Nous prions pour le pays Haïti, nous demandons pour être capable de voyer l'Esprit Saint pour aider tout le monde qui est dans le pays, spécialement les leaders, le gouvernement. Tout le monde qui est dans la position d'autorité dans le pays a aidé ou permettre. Vous êtes capable de porter changement dans tout ça qui est en fait. Dans le nom de Jésus, petit tout, je prie pour vous. Amen.
So as Juana said, thanks for joining us. I hope most of you had come to the session on Wednesday night and got to hear the stories of Renee and John and Bill, because they were all very powerful. So powerful, in fact, we ran out of time. So that's why we got into this special session today, because Wallace and I were also both in the earthquake, and we also both have our own stories of our experience. Then, do I go first?
My experience of the earthquake is that day, January the 12th, I remember myself and a few of my friends from the neighborhood. And so some of the students from outside who comes to our community art center to learn, a very few of them were there. And well, I remember before then we used to have a small experience of, a form of an earthquake, where the house, the building, it shook just a little bit, and we never had big earthquake before, but randomly it happens sometimes throughout the year. The art teacher, his name is Ralph Allen, who is a well-known Haitian artist. So, one day he happened to be there when the building shook, and his notice was that particular building I'm talking about, which is the community art center. So my art teacher mentioned that, you know what, I don't think this building is safe at all, because when that thing happened, the building shook at that time, you know, it appears to him that something needs to be done with the building. So for him, it was not really safe to teach at the community art center. So sometimes he would talk to me about maybe ask Michael if he could have the class somewhere else, maybe over at the next building, St. Joseph, instead of the community art center. I mean, he always tried to get me to go and ask Michael about having the class over there because, you know, he was so afraid that something might happen with that building. So that day, he was supposed to come and teach, but he didn't. So I was there with a couple of my friends and some of the artists that comes for art class. And I was on the rooftop of the community art center. I just got some nuts that fell down from a tree. It's called sablier. So the nut itself, we called it grain sablier. So I went to a ravine and collect a whole bunch of them and brought them back to St. Joseph so I can use them to make jewelry. So I was on the rooftop with my friends and we were working on the project together. And my roommate, who used to be Lele, that's his name. So I received a phone call from him. He was in the room and he called me so he can discuss something about school with me. So I went to the bedroom and we were there and we were talking about his schooling situation. And while we were there for like 2 minutes or so, suddenly the building started to shake. And then gradually, you know, it kept on shaking violently. I didn't know what it was because I had no experience being in an earthquake before. So as it was shaking violently, and Lele and myself, we each look at each other straight in the eye. And we were like, run! So we tried to run outside the building. When we got to Bill's office, we were trapped there. We couldn't get out. So I know for sure that the exit door wasn't locked or anything. But for some reason, we were trapped there. And you know, the building, it would, you know, go back and forth, you know, push us against the wall and we couldn't stand up straight. And while I was in that room, I could feel the noise of the ceiling cracking. You know, just, it felt like it was about to fall down, you know, upon us. So I tried to stay still, but I couldn't. Lele tried so hard to open the door and he couldn't. So I was like, well, maybe this is it for us. So I was about ready, you know, to let go with everything. So something talked to me at that moment. And I went to the door and I kicked it so hard with all my strength. Well, to tell you for sure, the door, I got it to open. And I know it wasn't really Wellness who opened the door. It was God. So we finally made it out there. in the courtyard. When we got there, it was so dark and dusty, I think, because of the cement of, because of all the cement, it got so dusty and we couldn't see where to go. I could hear, you know, people around the neighborhood screaming, crying for their loved ones. I could hear buildings around, you know, scrambled, and it was not a good experience. But I did think about running outside the gate to get out of the house. But instead, I made my way, I grabbed Lady's hand, I made my way to a little storage room in the courtyard area where we used to put stuff that we don't use anymore. So I went there and Lele was there with me, and still the building was like, you know, going back and forth. We were there for like a minute or so, and things started to settle down just a little. So at that time, we think it was a little safe to maybe get outside, get out from the building. So I tell him, well, I think it's a little safe for us to go away from the building now, which we did. As I walked past the gate, the main gate, you know, big pieces of concrete, I mean, it was huge. And, you know, it came from the rooftop of the community art center, and it fell almost right on us. So we ran, and as I was running, I saw it was T. Patrick. He was laying down on the concrete with nobody around him to support him. So I had Lele help me pick him up. And he had blood, you know, coming from his nose and from his face. He had blood all over. We tried to talk to him and he couldn't respond to us. But I noticed that he was breathing. So we took him to the open field where people from the community gathered that day. So we were there for a while, and at that time, I saw most of the boys on the open field, but I didn't see Michael nor Bill. And I know that they were in the building at the time of the earthquake. So I tried to run back in the building to look for them. But they were aftershock, and they weren't small ones, you know. They were big ones. So it stops me from going inside the building. So I went back to the open lab and tried to help people around me. And somebody told me that the school that the boys go to, it fell down, which is like 5 minutes away from St. Joseph Boys' Home. So I went down the hill on my way to the school to see how bad it was damaged. And as I was passing in front of our neighbor's house, and the guy who worked there, he saw me. I mean, he didn't know me. He saw me going down, and he asked me if I know anybody from the orphanage, which he mentioned. And I told him I'm from there. And he told me that the doctor, she's a lady who owns the house next door. And he told me that she saw a body in her yard. And she didn't want that person to die in her yard. And he asked me if I can take that body and move it somewhere else, because they didn't want anybody to die in their yard. So I went looking to see who it was. And I didn't see anybody. And even at that time, there was still aftershocks. So I tried to be brave, and I went looking for that body, and I was like, who's there? Who's there? Is there anyone there? And I heard a voice of one of our boys. His name is Alistone. I think he is like 13 years old, something like that. And he got caught on the rooftop of the house. Basically, his position was one of his foot got trapped under the wobble. And I saw him, he was hanging down. And he was calling for help. The sad part is, I was next door, and I was not able to help him. And he was keep calling for help. I felt very bad for him. So I look around me, and I saw Bill. He was laying down against a wall with a bunch of concrete around him. And then I said to him, Bill, are you okay? Are you okay? He was just staring at me, and he couldn't talk. So I tried to help him out. And he was so heavy, and at first he didn't want me to even touch him because he was so much in pain, and he didn't want to be moved. So I keep on trying. He kept pushing my hand. He told me to go get an ambulance. I was like, duh, an ambulance? I mean, I don't know what he was thinking at the time. I mean, there's no way I could get an ambulance at that time, and I didn't even know which number to dial. And as he mentioned in his talk, you know, only the company, the cell phone company, Itel, worked at that time. And I didn't had any Itel phone. I mean, I'm affiliated to Digicel. So my Digicel phone didn't work. and there's no way I could get an ambulance. So what I did is I went back to the open lot and looking for help. And I saw Patrick and I saw Lele, and I asked them if they could give me a hand with Bill. So we run back to the neighbor's house and we tried to lift him up, and he was in so much pain he wouldn't let get up. So we tried, we looked around us, we saw a big piece of cushion. So we laid flat and tried to hold him up and move him to the cushion, and which we did. We tried to lift it up. I think the cushion, it was too soft for him. So I sent Patrick to look for a door. He found one. I don't know where he found it, but he brought it back with him. So we laid down and we walled him on the door. This is how we were able to move him from that area to the open lot. Well, when we got halfway, I think he was so heavy, even though three people tried to carry him, I mean, he was so heavy, I had to say to the guy, no, let's take a break, I can't keep up. So we lay him down for like 2 to 3 minutes, and then we carry him again to the open lot, where everybody gathered. And when I get back, I saw Michael. I was like, oh, thank God, Michael's still alive. So we were counting heads, and we noticed that all the boys were there, and I was like, thank God, none of the boys, you know, didn't make it. So that was a good sign. And as time goes by, we were in the open space. And every once in a while, you know, people around from the neighborhood and people from other places, they keep bringing bodies. I mean, a lot of them, I mean, there were people who were very, I mean, severely hurt. And some of them, they were bringing them on a piece of wood that they could fight on. And some of them, they were bringing them in wheelbarrow. I mean, they were keep bringing people. And at the same time, being on the lot, you know, and just to look around and see how devastated that people were, and a lot of people did look hopeless. Even myself, I thought, you know, it was the end of the world. I was thinking about, what are we gonna do? And at the same time, I could hear people from the open lot, you know, singing, praising the Lord. And I said to myself, after something terrible like that happened, how could they be singing to the Lord? I mean, Like Rene Lawson mentioned before, why Haiti? I mean, with all that we are going through, why an earthquake in Haiti? Do we really deserve an earthquake in Haiti and all the destruction it caused? But, you know, I don't know where the Haitian, I don't know where the Haitians found the strength. But, you know, they would keep singing and singing, praising the Lord, praying. You know, they were holding each other that day, and I was like, wow. This is something. So I found it to be very amazing. The fact that the Haitians were able to find strength and have the courage, you know, to keep praising the Lord in the midst of all the destructions that happened. So even myself and all the boys, we got on our knees, we were praying and singing along with them. I mean, they would keep on singing all night long, nonstop. Even the second day, you know, keep on praising the Lord. So, Kez, who is the American nurse that was there, she was helping all night long, helping with the people, give them medicines and stuff that they needed at the time. And I was there. It was dark, there were no electricity at all. She had flashlights, and I mean, I was there next to her, helping her give people medicines, and she had, I don't know how they call it, that thing that the doctors often use to control your temper, stuff like that. Well, she was doing checkups and, I mean, on some of the people that really got hurt during the earthquake, and I remember asking her questions sometimes about some particular people that they check up on, and her response on some was that they are not going to make it through the night. So when I heard that, you know, I started crying, and it was so hard. And I never experienced being around dead bodies before. So it was tough. And still, even during the night and the following day, you know, the aftershocks, it just never stopped. And I didn't know where that was going. So we were on the field, and we could feel that, you know, it vibrated. And I had a lot of things come up to my mind at that time. I was thinking, what if the land, the pieces of land, you know, split up? Because these are things that I've seen in movies, you know. I started thinking about stuff like that, things that could happen. So each time something like that come to my mind, I started praying, trying to get rid of the negative that are coming through my mind. So I tried to sleep that day, I couldn't. I don't think anybody even slept that day because of what happened. And in the morning, they line up all the dead bodies on one side of the field, and there were young children, I think 6-year-old babies. It was very hurtful just to see that. And that night of the earthquake, a lady did give birth to a child. And she was laying down like 2 feet away from me, and Kaz, she was helping her, and I think what happened in Haiti is, it was unexpected. Well, things like that happened, and I'm assuming it's still happening in other places around the world, and destruction comes in different ways. Well, I think that was Haiti's time to experience something like that, and we are now learning from it. I know that a lot of houses got damaged, were destroyed by the earthquake. I mean, this is not it. Terrible things happen to Haiti, but I don't think we should be, us Haitians should be discouraged because of all the destructions that happen. I mean, we have to move on with life. I mean, we are in a mission. If we go back to the story of Jesus, with all that he had been through, he didn't give up. He never gave up. So I think Jesus is a good example for the Haitians and for everyone around the world to follow. No matter what happened, you cannot be discouraged. You have to move on. Keep up with the good work you are doing. Like what we are doing in Haiti at St. Joseph. Keep on caring for the homeless and the children that are disadvantaged. I mean, it is the way to make a difference in Haiti. And Haiti needs a lot of prayer. So if you would please pray for Haiti, come and visit sometime. I'm sure your contribution will help, will make a big difference in the lives of people over there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The day of the earthquake, I was in a little bit of a different place than everybody else. Ben and Renee and John and Bill and Wallace were all at St. Joseph's, which is our home in Port-au-Prince. I happen to live in Fairmont, which is about 45 minutes up the mountain, at our home for handicapped kids. We had 39 kids there at the time. And it was just a regular day, and it was starting to get dinner time for the kids, so everybody was pretty much down on one level, waiting for dinner. Some kids were in bed, some kids were playing. And I was in my room, as I usually am, right in front of the computer, working. And I lived in my room was kind of the size of a dorm room. And at one end of it, there was a balcony that had a beautiful view of the mountains. And as Renee said the other day, I'm from the Midwest too. I don't know earthquakes from anything. I know tornadoes and floods and blizzards, but I don't know earthquakes. And so I had just stood up from my desk to do something, and the shaking started. And we had had some foundation problems in this building. This building is a five-story building that goes over a ravine. And so my first thought was like, oh, we just spent like $80,000 to fix this foundation, and the foundation's going. But pretty quickly I realized, no, it's way worse than that. And I got really calm. I do pretty well in crises, and I got really calm, and I wasn't going to run out of the building. It didn't even occur to me, because I knew the kids were all downstairs. And I thought, okay, and it went on for a really long time, and it was really, really violent. And I thought, okay, well, this is it. The building's going to crumble. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to watch the mountains while this happens. And so I just got really calm, and I just turned my head and looked out my balcony door and watched the mountains. I have to look through my computer's on one side and the balcony door's on the other side, so I had to look through my entire room. But I was so focused on those mountains and thinking, okay, this is it, and I'm just going to try to be as calm as I can be and watch the mountains while the building goes down. And it kept shaking, and it kept shaking, and about 40 seconds later, it stopped. And I started looking around my room, and I realized that everything that I owned was now on the floor, broken and wet, my water bottle had fallen over, and I hadn't seen any of that happen. Because I was so focused on those mountains and having something good and positive and beautiful in my sight. So when it stopped, then I ran out, and there was ramps that went down. You had to go down two stories to get to the kids. And as I ran towards the ramp, one way, the security guard was running inside, and the first thing I said to him is, I said, was it us or was it everybody? And he said, no, it was everybody. And so we ran downstairs to make sure all the kids were okay, and the first thing I saw when I ran into the dining room was some blood on the floor, and Tiga was bleeding from his head, and I said, what happened to Tiga? And Casey, the other American who lives there, looked at me and she goes, I was bandaging that up before the earthquake. Rich Schneider hit him with a stick. So that was really our only injury. But I grabbed, when I was running downstairs, I grabbed one of the bio books of our kids, because there's 39 of them, and they're all severely handicapped, and they tend to wander a little bit, so it's hard to do a head check, because they're never all in the same place at the same time. So we went down and checked through the book to make sure we saw every kid. We saw every kid was okay. But as I was running downstairs, you could tell that the building had severe structural damage. It didn't go down, thankfully, but it was clear that it wasn't safe. And so we were continuing to have pretty major aftershocks. The sun was going down, and I was a photojournalist for a long time, so I've covered a lot of disasters, and I worked pretty well in a crisis, and so we had kids in the beds, kids out of the wheelchairs, and I just said, we're grabbing kids and we're going upstairs. There's two parts to our building. There was the original part that was two stories, and then there was kind of a place where the two buildings were attached, and then there was this five-story building. I said, and in the old building, the thing closest to the door was the guest dining room, which is smaller than this room. It was probably half the size of this room. And so I said, and it was the closest thing to the door, and that building looked like it was okay from a distance. So I said, just grab kids. We're all going to the dining room. And so that's what we did. In a matter of a few minutes, everybody that was there just grabbed kids and ran to that dining room. I said, you know, we'll worry about mattresses, we'll worry about wheelchairs later. We're just getting into a safe place right now. So that's one of the first things that happened. And as that was happening, I went into the dining room and moved stuff around, but also my journalism training kicked in, and I thought, okay, the phone lines are going to go down pretty quickly. So the first thing I did was call my mom. And I said, and by then the adrenaline's flowing. I'm not as calm as I was. The adrenaline was flowing a little bit. And I said, I'm okay. The kids are okay. We're trying to get to someplace safe. And she says, what are you talking about? This was 5 minutes before it appeared on CNN.
Wow.
And I just said, major, major earthquake, and then the phone cut out. So my parents were, my mom was fortunate to know that we were okay. At Wings, we were okay. And so we kept moving kids, and my phone rang again, and Michael had gotten a line through. And I answered the phone, and he said, you're alive. And I said, yeah, and you're alive. And he said, yes, but St. Joseph's is gone. Which I could not compute whatsoever. This was a 7-story building, and that I had known for, 22 years as home. And I couldn't comprehend that the word St. Joseph's was gone. He goes, we can't find one of the guests, and we can't find Bill. And then I lost his phone call. Still running up, moving kids upstairs, trying to call him as we're running. Can't get lines back and forth. We finally get all the kids upstairs. We start moving mattresses so they have some place to sleep that night. Start moving wheelchairs in case the building falls. I ran into my bedroom to get, a few things packed in case I needed anything to survive. And I clearly remember standing outside my door. And those of you, everybody knows who Bill is now. And he's the heart and soul of, sorry. But he's the heart and soul of the St. Joseph family.
Number two.
He's really the heart and soul of the St. Joseph family. And I will never forget the sound of Michael's voice. Because I answered the phone and all he said was, Bill is gone. And I said, what did you just say? And he said it again. And I literally felt my knees buckling. I was going down. And in that split second before I hit the ground, somebody ran up behind him and told him that Bill was on the phone to Jeff Day. And Michael starts screaming in Creole, Bill's alive, Bill's alive, Bill's alive, and he hangs up. So I went from Bill is gone to Bill's alive in about 10 seconds. And it was like the most weird feeling in the world. And then again, you can't get lines back and forth. So I don't know what's happening at all. But we're still moving kids. We're still trying to get settled in this tiny little room. Now, for our kids, some of them thought the earthquake was kind of fun. It was like an amusement park ride, I guess. I don't know. There were some that realized what was going on and were scared, but for the most part, we were lucky in the fact that, we didn't have we didn't have 40 terrified kids. We had a handful of scared kids, but pretty much everybody was like, oh, we get to go hang out in the guest dining room, which they never get to do. And so we made camp in there. We couldn't fit mattresses for everybody, so we just had as many mattresses on the floor as we could. We got everybody safe. We didn't quite know what was going on. At that point, the resident assistant director that lived with us was off being married. And so the assistant director from our home in Jacmel had come in 2 days earlier. Didn't know our kids, didn't know the layout, didn't know anything. And our director and assistant director weren't there. So Casey, the other American, and I were kind of running the show and trying to figure out what we're going to do. So we got everybody settled as best we could that night. We ran out and bought phone cards before everything was closed and you couldn't get phone cards anymore, so we got as many phone cards as we can. And then once we got everybody settled, I said, I have to go to St. Joseph's. I have to figure out what's going on with the guests. I have to figure out what's going on with Bill. I have to see the kids. I have to see Michael. I have to see what's going on. So we knew somebody with a tap-tap, which is like a little pickup truck. And so he took me down the mountain. The road was pretty good. There wasn't too much damage on the road. But the thing that was the most incredible to me, and it was like this for weeks and weeks, is that you would drive into Port-au-Prince, and there were people everywhere, just wandering. Nobody had any place to go. Nobody wanted to be in a building. So there was just masses of people on the streets that there's a lot of people in Haiti, and you see people on the streets all the time. I've never seen anything like this. And it went on for a few weeks. And as we got to the top of the street that you turn off to go to St. Joseph's, there was a huge, I think it was like a 4 or 5 story white building. And that had collapsed onto the street that St. Joseph's was on. And so we couldn't drive down there. And so we parked at the top and we climbed over about 8 feet of rubble to get down to where the street was. And, you know, and all this time I'm questioning, you know, God, why is this happening? What's going on? I'm questioning my faith and questioning everything. And as we climb over the 8 foot of rubble to get down to the street level, there's a group of probably about 20 people from that neighborhood sitting in the middle of the street because nobody wanted to be anywhere near a building. And they were just singing and praying. And so we stopped and sang and prayed with them, and that was the last moment of doubt that I had. Because I knew God was in Haiti, and I knew God was with the Haitian people. And so we stood there for a few minutes and prayed with them, and then we went on, and I came up to the vacant lot, and Michael was sitting near bed. Bill's head. Bill was laying on a mattress at that point. Looked like he was dead, but was probably thankfully knocked out by some narcotics. And John and Renee were sitting at his feet, clearly in shock. And I just remember bending down and giving Renee a hug and feeling the most inadequate I've ever felt in my entire life that night. And just saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Because at that point, we pretty much knew that Ben was buried and we weren't going to be able to get to him. And then Michael took me down and we looked at the house, which was unbelievable to me with the way the house looked. And so we were there for a while, and Renee and John talked about Al, who was trapped with them, the old gentleman, who he and his wife had served for a year with us in Jacmel, and they had arrived that day to come back for our anniversary celebration. And they were pretty well, he was pretty well hurt, he was cut up pretty bad. And so I took him, we went back up to, when we decided to go back up to Wings about an hour later, we walked back up the way we came in, and we were going to start climbing over the rubble to get back up, and the people who were praying in the street there said, don't go up there, the building's been falling while you were gone. So we couldn't go back up that way, so then we had to walk around a couple more blocks to get to a place where we could get back to where the tap dump was. And so we took Gail and Al up to Wings that night, and I spent probably a couple hours cleaning debris out of all his cuts and his head and his arms and his legs. And we just kind of tried to make it through the night. None of us slept either that night. We couldn't turn the generator on because we didn't want the vibrations of the building. Where the two buildings were joined, there was a physical split. You could see the sky. And so we didn't want to turn the generator on for fear that we would do further damage to the building. We had an inverter that lasted us a couple of days. But we lived in that room for 8 days with those kids before we found rental facilities. The next day, I went down to St. Joseph's every single day in between because there was no way to get communications back and forth. And the next morning when we went back, we brought back all the boys from St. Joseph's. So we had 40 severely handicapped kids, 20 kids from St. Joseph's, and about 10 to 15 adults all living in that space for 8 days. And then our kids were off their meds. Because it was just a time when we couldn't regulate meds, and so one of us would have to stay awake all night long because we have several kids with seizure disorders. And so somebody would have to stay awake in case somebody had a seizure to make sure that they were turned on their side and weren't aspirating, which was a challenge because we're in a very tiny space, and so usually the kid that was seizing, you had to step over about 6 other kids to try to get to them with one light burning in that room all night. Inverter gave out on like day 2, and then it was like the Hanukkah miracle of the inverter, because we thought, okay, now we don't have anything because we don't have any light, we don't have any internet, we didn't have any internet the first 2 days, and we don't have any lights. But then somebody went downstairs and discovered there was a light on, and there was another inverter that we didn't know was hooked up. And so we were able to run an extension cord from that inverter to where we were, and that lasted the entire time we were at Wings. It was able to power one light at night, charge everybody's cell phones, and get us on the internet for a couple hours a day to let everybody know where we were and what was going on. And how that lasted that long, I don't know. But it was one of the miracles. that we had. And so the amazing thing about our staff and our family and our organization is that the caregivers for our kids all live off-site. They all have their own families. Many of them live in Port-au-Prince. At 6:30 the next morning, every single person who's a direct, not the education staff, but who's a direct caregiver for the kids, who bathes them and feeds them and dresses them for the day, showed up for work on time to make sure our kids were okay. These are people who lost family members, who lost their own homes, who were homeless themselves, but were concerned about our kids, because it's their kids too. So that was incredible for us. And every day since then, it's been a miracle in another way. We found a place to live after 8 days. They're not handicap accessible, and they're much smaller than we're used to, but they're strong buildings. And so we're very thankful for that. We're starting to dream of the future and the new wings of hope and what we can give the kids, and we're very thankful for that. But there's still things that hurt every day. The thing that hurts most about Ben's death to us is that St. Joseph's, if you've ever been there, is kind of a oasis in the chaos that is in Port-au-Prince. And we take pride in welcoming people into that house. And the fact that we won't be able to protect Ben in that instance is with us every day. And he's talked about every time we tell the story, he's talked about. And the Larson family and the Splickle family and the O'Ring family will always be with us. And we thank them for their grace and strength and compassion that showed us this year, because it's been a tough year, but to know that we have people like that in our family is very powerful to us. So like Paul said before, you know, we ask for your prayers and we ask for your support. And we'll get through it day by day. There's a Haitian proverb that says, little by little, the bird builds its nest. And that's what we're doing. We're rebuilding our nests. And we invite you all to come and help with that. Renee and John are both here, too. We have a few minutes left. Bill has another class, but if anybody has a question for him, I can try to figure out an answer. But if anybody has any questions, just thanks for listening to us and giving us the strength to tell our stories. Yes.
Well, you're a journalist.
Yes.
Did you keep your camera with you?
I kept my camera and my computer. Not a lot of clothes, but my camera and my computer I kept with me. And I took a lot of pictures. And I emailed a lot. We were getting hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. I was, anyway. And Facebook really saved us, because I just directed everybody to Facebook. The only two people who ever got an email response from me immediately were my mom and Renee.
How did you get Ali Sun down?
Well, that same ladder that they use for, that you use, and also Al. So we used that ladder, and nobody could get to him because it was too dangerous. So we put up the ladder in a way that he could reach it. So his tennis shoes got stuck. Somehow he managed to get his foot out of the tennis shoes. So he climbed down with two people holding the ladder.
Renee, did you ever think about leaving Haiti?
No. No, I left 3 weeks later to bring a little boy who was being adopted to the States, and it was the only reason I hesitated to do that, although it was the place he needed to be, was that I didn't know how I was getting him back, and I spent the next 10 days trying to get back. But I didn't think about leaving that. It's my home, and that's my family, and you know, to be away from him for those 10 days during that time was really hard.
Can I share a little?
Yeah. I always give her a rebuttal when she hears me talk.
When Renee called home, we have a funeral director in Cedar Rapids who goes to all kinds of disaster areas. And he was going to Haiti, and he called and asked if there was anything he could take to her. And at this time, it was his first 8 days when they were in that small room, and they needed some air mattresses. And then she said, go and find all the Benadryl you can find and send it with him. And I said, Benadryl, what for? Well, nobody had medications, and all these kids were jumping around in this room.
Everybody got a little piece of pink candy when they The other funny thing about that is, I know Lutherans like the beer, and we have one group that comes and always we lay in a supply of beer when they show up. And so they had been at Wings one night, and then they went off to Jacmel the morning of the earthquake. And so I had, I think, 3 cases of Haitian beer in my room. And so we didn't have much water after the earthquake, and so those of us who were adults were using Prestige to get through the day. Staying hydrated.
And just my memory of listening to the accounts, every time I heard there was another aftershock, that was just so, it was like insult to injury almost. Yeah. It was like, can it stop already?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the earthquake, you didn't see that coming, but then the aftershocks, the fear of the next one.
That was unnerving, actually, because it would just keep happening. And, you know, for months afterwards, I felt aftershocks that didn't happen. I felt aftershocks when I took Delmas to Boston 3 weeks later. I was feeling aftershocks in Boston. I felt them for a long time after. I still do not like going into parking garages in the United States.
No.
Because if you're in there, the floor moves. Yeah. There are certain, and in big airports, I can feel the floor move. So there's places I don't like going now because it was unnerving. And then 8 days afterwards, there was a huge aftershock about 6 in the morning, and I just remember laying there on the floor in the midst of all the kids, and this huge aftershock happened. You know, just at that point, they had happened so much, I just laid there. Like, well, what's going to happen is going to happen, and I'm going to lay here because the kids can't get out, so I'm not getting out.
But how long did they go on for?
Months.
Oh,
yeah. Months. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to determine because really we were feeling them. Because there would be a group of us sitting around, and if you felt one, you kind of looked at everybody else and went, did you feel that? Was it just me?
It happens a lot.
It happened a lot.
Wellness, didn't you say when we came back to visit in February, you said that there was a strong aftershock maybe a week or two before we got there, and that some kids had jumped out of the school building?
Yeah, I mean, it happens often in schools. I mean, sometimes it could be a big machinery going down the road. And they could feel the building, you know, vibrating. And suddenly students, you know, started jumping down, you know, roof.
Yeah, pretty much the entire country has PTSD.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some died, some have, you know, big injuries because of that. So it happens in 1980 after the earthquake.
Yeah.
Wellness, I'm struck by your humbleness is the only word I can think of in somehow concluding that it was Haiti's turn. You know, why Haiti? Why now? And I just wanted to suggest that when you're ready to move from the gut and the heart, I recently read a book by Terry Fretheim, who's done a number of teaching sessions here at Holden. The book is entitled Creation Untamed. God, Scripture, and Natural Disasters. And I found that so helpful. Somewhat consoling, even though it doesn't have all the answers. But one would be to say that God took such a risk in creating the universe as well as the humanity, that when those kind of things happen, God also cries, and God hurts. But to remove the risk would be to remove the freedom and the continuing creation both cosmically and humanly. I recommend the book.
I think the other way that we get through it, at least in terms of the Saints and Family, is that we know we are people of the resurrection. And the resurrection is a powerful image for us and a powerful part of our family. I mean, our dance company is called Resurrection Dance Theater. We feel we're giving these children lives with resurrection. And so looking towards the resurrection and looking towards what can be now that everything has been taken away, that's how we're getting through it. A lot of dreaming of the future, dreaming of a better future. You know, you have to go through the death to get to the resurrection, and that's kind of what we feel a lot too.
I have to say to John and Renee, you lift me up. It's just amazing how you can look forward and be so joyful and enter into this whole week. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for coming. Mm-hmm.